Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up in a little bit, I'll let you know where I've been right, where I've been wrong. We'll also get to our Tuesday Top 10 that we do every Tuesday in the show. And a whole lot more. Don't dance on Alabama's grave just yet. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. And you can always join the conversation as well, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. Or online, just head over to charlestonsportsradio.com, click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show as well. We closed out last hour talking about Jared Foulkes, linebacker for ETSU in his eighth year. And we got to nothing that I was hoping to touch on because we went off on a whole tangent. As oftentimes occurs, the conversation got a little bit away from me when talking about, you know, a 26-year-old in college, 8 years in, is it still worthwhile? Now, if you go to the NFL, yes, it certainly becomes worth it. Otherwise, right, if it's off to the real world next, I get pushing that off as long as you want. Right? Looking back, I wish I spent more time in college. I graduated in 4 years. I wish I did spend more time. At the time, I was ready to move on. Like, okay, this has been a blast, but I'm ready to start my career. I can only imagine 8 years of college. I never wanted to do anything that required extra schooling. That's why I talk about sports, because you don't have to. You don't even have to go to college to do it. I did, but you know, I wasn't going to medical school. I didn't want to do anything that required more schooling after college. I was done with it. By the way, Chris Wanky is the quarterback from Florida State, Joe, that you referenced. Wanky, I remember him in the NFL. I remember him at Florida State. I had no idea he played minor league baseball before Florida State, so I have to plead ignorance there. And then went to Florida State. When he was drafted, let's see, he was 28 when he was drafted. So when his career ended with Florida State, he was 28 years old, which is, I mean, kind of unfair, right? He was a Heisman winner. He should have been. He was 28 years old going up against, in certain cases, 18-year-olds. Like Brandon Whedon was great at Oklahoma State. Yeah, well, he was a decade older than everybody. We'll see how this quarterback does at North Texas. Jared Foulkes was the defensive player of the year in the Southern Conference last year. Well, I mean, he was 25 years old, and he's going up against, in certain cases, 18, 19, 20-year-olds in most cases. It seems a little ridiculous. But in terms of Jared Foulkes, because an article was written about him by Chris Lowe on ESPN.com, I just find this interesting, how you can even reach 8 years. He becomes the first ever college football player to play an eighth season now. And they call him around campus Grandpa, as you would imagine, Unc for Uncle, even the Bionic Man because he's had a bunch of injuries and surgeries, unfortunately. Some of his youngest teammates at ETSU were in fifth grade when he started playing college football. Now they're teammates at ETSU, which kind of goes to my point. He was playing college football when kids were in fifth grade that he's now going up against. That's how big of a difference there is. Right, much like the same for Brandon Weed and Chris, any of these other guys that do this. Now, it's a little bit different because they went the minor league baseball route. Jared Foulkes, he's been in college. He's been playing college football for 8 years. It's just been a series of events that has led him to now playing an eighth year at ETSU.
Okay, now, ETSU revived their football program. When was it, 2015 or 16?
Yes.
So he actually started playing college football before ETSU revived their their team.
That's right. Absolutely. I was going to mention that. Tom Brady has won 3 of his 7 Super Bowls since Jared Foulkes began his college career. Lane Kiffin wasn't even hired at Alabama yet, let alone FAU or now Ole Miss, when Jared Foulkes began his career. TikTok wasn't created. And as Joe just mentioned, ETSU wasn't even playing football at the time. They brought back their program. Folks started at Temple with Matt Rhule, head coach of the Panthers currently. And he started in 2014, and he has had a bunch of surgeries, injuries. He's closing in on his third degree. And I didn't even know this was possible. I don't know if this is because of name, image, and likeness or what, but he's already joined the workforce. He works as a credit union's marketing coordinator while playing football for ETSU. So he is already starting his career. By the way, to put it in further perspective, his freshman season was the same year as Patrick Mahomes' freshman season. So Mahomes has gone on, played in multiple Super Bowls, has had already almost like a Hall of Fame NFL career. Jared Foulkes is still playing college football. Additionally, he played against Saquon Barkley while at Temple. So he faced Barkley in college. Barkley, similar, right? He's played 4 years in the NFL. He's already kind of being labeled a bust. He's already had an NFL career in which we're kind of calling Barkley a bust. Here's Jared Foulkes still playing college football now for ETSU. The journey began in 2014. He's from Pennsylvania. He went to go play at Temple, got a scholarship. He redshirted his first season in 2014 because he was too small. 2015, he gets injured during the preseason, 2 weeks before the first game, missed that season. So 2 years, doesn't play a single game. 2016, Matt Rhule took his scholarship away because his grades weren't good enough. And then 2017, he played in only one game. He was unable to participate in spring practice, I think because of his issues, you know, in the classroom or off the field. Played in only one game that year. And then it was clear he had kind of fallen out of favor with the coaching staff. So he transferred. And he went to ETSU for 2018, I believe it was. It's hard to keep this all straight because, actually, Marcus Satterfield was there. Here's another local connection. Satterfield is now the offensive coordinator for the Gamecocks. Well, he coached at Temple with Matt Rhule. Then he went to ETSU. So when Jared Foulkes was looking for a new place to go, he knew Scott Satterfield at ETSU. That's where he went. So he wound up at ETSU. He said he did not meet his coaches until his second week of classes. He knew Satterfield, but then Satterfield left for a job elsewhere. He, in fact, went to Baylor with Matt Rhule. So the one guy he knew that brought him to ETSU now left. He said, you know, I just kind of showed up to go play, and I did not meet the coaches or really become familiar with the program until I was already in classes and everything, and it's kind of an awkward situation. So he played 2018 with ETSU. Then ETSU applied for and got an extra year of eligibility for him for 2019 because he missed two seasons for Temple. Right? The NCAA, this is something they've been willing to do more recently. They give you that 6 year. They've always, of course, given you a fifth year. You redshirt, you get injured, whatever the reason for your redshirt, they'll give you a fifth year. Now, they've been a little more lenient granting a sixth year even if you have a second season affected by injury. So that was the case here. They applied. The NCAA granted him another year of eligibility for 2020. And then 2020 happens, and right, we have the pandemic, and so they give everybody their year back of eligibility, which now leads him to this year. So he redshirted. He got injured, got an extra year back, transferred, got a year back because of the pandemic, this and that. Anyways, Jared Foulkes right now is playing in his eighth season of college football. Now, I guess in his defense, he could say, like, I was injured. You know, I only played half of those seasons. Okay, I mean, I get that. But, you know, you still only get about 5 years because of the pandemic now, 5 years actually playing on the field. You can't, it'd be very hard to actually play all eight of those years. He wouldn't get the extra years granted by the NCAA. But still, 26 years old, defensive player of the year in the conference last year, one of the best linebackers, eighth year of college football.
I wonder if he can relate to the one character in a movie, Division III, starring Charleston-born Andy Dick.
Oh, yeah.
Where the trainer asked him, how come you're able to play and you're so old? And he said, you ever heard of redshirting?
Yeah, that's right.
And, of course, at the end of the movie, the guy he's always hanging around with calls him Dad.
Yeah, I mean, that's the case here. Now, again, also in his defense, I had a lot of injuries along the way. So, you know, I mean, good for him for being able to play. I just found it very interesting. First ever eight-year player in college football. And we saw him, you know, we broadcast that game Saturday when he played against the Citadel, played, of course, against them here in Charleston last year. And then I saw this article written on ESPN.com. He's getting some good publicity lately. Scott Satterfield was asked about it, by the way, for the article. And he said, holy hell, he's still playing? It's not like he's at Notre Dame either, where he's getting all the perks and benefits of being at a Power 5 school. You're at ETSU, and you get on a bus and ride 8 hours to the Citadel to play a game. All right, the Citadel got a name drop in this article. Thank you, Scott Satterfield. Satterfield says he's not doing it for anything other than the love of the game, which is really cool. Yeah, I guess so. So Jared Foulkes, first ever 8-year college football player playing in the Southern Conference. 26-year-old linebacker who was the defensive player of the year in the SoCon. He is good. He's having another good year this year. He's a really good defensive player. But, you know, part of it may also be that he's like 8 years older than some of the offensive linemen or running backs he's going up against. That's a big difference in your, even just your body. Think of what you were like as an 18-year-old when you first got to college compared to a 26. You're a man at 26 years old. A little bit different than going up against still some kids. They're still kids, 18, 19-year-old. Big advantage. Would you want to play college football for 8 years? At a certain point, I would think, maybe it's time to go, to move on to the next thing. After 4 years of college, I felt that way. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Let's go to the phones. Jim is with us. Jim, what's going on? How are you?
I'm okay. I got two things to add to your show today. Number one is I disagree with you about Charlie Morton. I watched him last time he pitched. Pitched one heck of a game, 9 strikeouts. But the inning ended, he walked into the dugout, and the guy says, I don't know how he's going to make it back out there. Next inning, he gives up the home run. I think Charlie needs an extra day. That's just me saying. There's got to be somebody else that's younger that could put out there today and then save Charlie in case of for tomorrow, because he ran out of gas after 6 innings the other day. That's my first point. My second point, in your building right there, you have a man. Now, I consider cheerleading a sport. He played cheerleader 9.5 years, and the Gamecocks still didn't have a winner, Bobby Harton. 9.5 years he was a cheerleader. Now, I don't know why he's got an extra half a year. Maybe he can go back. Maybe he can play tailback for the Gamecocks when they go around to their scoring new gimmick plays or whatever. 9.5 years as a cheerleader is a record, too, in football. I looked it up.
I'm sure it is. That's also equally impressive. Appreciate it, Jim. It's a little bit different, I guess, right, that if you were a cheerleader as opposed to the football player. Because football, there's that real advantage of the size. Cheerleader, you can cheerlead as long as you want. You should be able to come back and cheerlead even after you graduate. Why not? But in terms of the Braves and Charlie Morton, yeah, by the way, yeah, you know, you want to throw a defensive lineman halfback pass with Jordan Burch. Imagine you throw Bobby out there with a halfback pass. That would certainly be of interest. In terms of the Atlanta Braves and Charlie Morton, I do understand that point. I don't know how well he's going to pitch today. I would just take the chance. I'm willing to take the chance and find out, because then you go to Max Fried in Game 5, right? If Morton doesn't pitch well, say he does get rocked today. It's like, okay, well, now we do have a Game 5. But I would push my chips to the center of the table and try to finish it off today. And maybe Morton goes out there and pitches well. Maybe won't be able to go too long. Maybe only get 5 out of him. But, hey, you'll take that, especially in a playoff game. And then, you know, let's roll the dice with – if it doesn't win, roll the dice. You feel pretty good still about Fried in a Game 5 going back to Milwaukee. You'd like to avoid that situation. But if that's Plan B, that's a pretty good Plan B. I would take my chance with Morton. Is it going to work out? I'll get back to you in about 6 hours. We'll see how well he pitches tonight. But I'd be willing to take that chance. On paper, it could be a little troubling. 38-year-old, soon to be, next month. 38-year-old who's only started on short rest once in his entire career, and it was 13 years ago. All right, I get it, but I'm willing to take the chance and try to finish this thing today instead of going back to Milwaukee. And again, if it bottoms out, if it fails, all right, well, that's why we have Game 5, and you also have a good pitcher going in Game 5 as well. But try to avoid getting to Game 5. Coming up, I'll let you know where I've been right and where I've been wrong in the sports world over the past week, mostly with football. We'll do that next, as we do every week. It's the More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
I'm doing great, but I'm hoping you could call me Boca Baby.
Great show. You're doing a good job.
Hey, you're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You're always getting these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear. We like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke. Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Charleston that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Lunch with Luke for 3 hours, anything goes.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, where I've been right and where I have been wrong. We'll get to that here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Been talking about this 8-year college football player for ETSU, linebacker Jared Folks, on the text line. And you can always text the show, 843-608-1734. On the text line, somebody said, hey, maybe he can do a name, image, and likeness deal for Gratian Formula. Help with that gray hair. Yeah, that'd be a good one. Jared Folks could become a spokesperson for, like, Skechers or New Balance, whatever that those sneakers are for the older folks. By the way, I've always said this about athletes. I don't understand it. You could compare it almost to, like, presidents. You go into the office, you come out 8 years later, and you look like you aged 80 years. Athletes, the same idea. Like, Brett Favre, it always tickled me that Brett Favre was only, like, 40 years old, and he used to look, we'd talk about him like he was a dinosaur. You know, like, oh, Brett Favre, can he go out there and play? Fast forward a decade, Tom Brady is excelling at 44. But back then, Brett Favre was 40, and he looked so old. He was all gray, and he took a beating, you know, throughout his career. 40 years old, you may be 40 listening right now. Like, 40 is, we were talking about Brett Favre like he was at the end of his life. You know, like he was going to, literally die out there. Like, oh, boy, Brett Favre, is he going to be okay? He was 40, and he looked so much older. Similar for Curt Schilling. Curt Schilling, when he was like 38 years old, looked so old out there. And then, you know, and then you have the bloody sock and everything, and it's like, oh boy, Curt Schilling, so old and beat up out there. Yeah, he's only 38. In the grand scheme, in life, 38 is still very young. You hope you still have, you know, the second half, you're not even at the midway point of your life. And of course, sports, I understand the careers are much shorter. Your career does end by 40, so in sports terms, they are old, but they also just look old. Brett Favre looks so much older than he was. He looked a lot older at 40 than, you know, your 40-year-old neighbor. Same with Curt Schilling. Did you see Mason Crosby in the Packers game this other week? He's the oldest-looking 37-year-old I've ever seen in the NFL. He's all gray. He could promote for Gratian Formula. Now, you missed a bunch of kicks. Maybe that's part of the reason that speeds up the aging process for him. But I don't get it. I mean, I guess it's a stressful job being an athlete, but it's also, there's a big luxurious part to it compared to the everyday folk who's not making millions of dollars. I don't understand why these guys, they all look, football, okay, they take, you know, a quarterback back in the day like Brett Favre took a beating. Some of these guys, they take a real beating. Okay, I understand. They're all beat up. They can't walk straight by the time they're 40. They've played in the league for 18 years. I understand they look a little bit older than they are because of the train wrecks they've put themselves through. But I don't know. Curt Schilling is the one I always think of for baseball. Like, he just looks so much older than he actually was. At the end of the day, he was like 38. Are you kidding? And 38 is still so young. But he looked like an old man out there. He looked older than my father when he was pitching on the mound. Also on the text line, somebody asked about John Gruden. Since John Gruden resigned, do you think Joe Brady is good if interested? Do you think the Panthers have a backup plan for who will take his place? No, I don't think they do, but they probably should. Well, we'll see. You know, the way the first 3 weeks went, Joe Brady was probably high on everybody's list with the job he was doing with Sam Darnold, much like Joe Burrow a few years ago. But now, the last 2 weeks, I think everybody has kind of soured on both Sam Darnold and the Panthers right now. We'll see when Christian McCaffrey comes back, which may be this Sunday, how things look. But if you're Darnold, you've already kind of been exposed. Like, oh, yeah, I mean, you need Christian McCaffrey to play well. I still think Joe Brady, because I believe the rest of the season will still go pretty well for the Panthers and their offense, and I do think Brady would be high on the list for teams that need a head coach. I also think Kellen Moore, offensive coordinator for the Cowboys, will be very high. I think Kellen Moore will get an opportunity somewhere else next year for the job he's doing with Dak Prescott this year running the Cowboys offense, especially if they continue to roll and win that division. So Joe Brady, I think he'll be on a lot of people's lists, you know, because he's kind of from the mold of Sean McVay. I think Kellen Moore, similar, young offensive coach, will be another one of those names. We always hear about Eric Bieniemy. We'll see. The Raiders as a job, how good of a job is it is? If you want to look ahead and think like, well, what jobs could become available? It's still too early to project in the NFL. Maybe the Giants. Maybe they move on from Joe Judge already. That could be a little soon. Maybe the Vikings with Mike Zimmer. Maybe Matt Nagy with the Bears. How would the Raiders compare? The Raiders, on paper, I don't think is will be one of the best jobs. I think there's a lot of holes on that roster. Derek Carr's played really well this year, but it's not like you're taking over an Aaron Rodgers. I mean, Carr's a good quarterback, but I don't think he's the type of guy that would get you to that job. Like, oh, yeah, I got to go to Las Vegas because I got Derek Carr. It's better than showing up and not having a quarterback. You do have a good quarterback that can win you some games right away, but it's not like the big selling point. If I sit down with the owners, if I sit down with Mark Davis, and he's actually trying to sell me on the job and says, well, we have Derek Carr, like, I don't think that goes a long way. Okay, I mean, that's good. I mean, he's, you know, top half of the league quarterback, but he's not a top 10 quarterback. I don't think that'd get me to necessarily sign on the dotted line. But I will say this, for the next coach to go to the Raiders, I think you'd have a lot of job security because I think the Raiders are going to try to almost overcompensate for what just happened with Gruden. And even though they didn't fire him and he resigned and there was a scandal, I think the next coach they bring, they have to try to improve their image now, do some damage control. So whatever coach they bring in, like, I don't think they're going to just fire him after a year or two and then continue to look like a bit of a train wreck out there with the Raiders. I think whoever they bring in, they want him to be the guy to take over, you know, get this franchise back on the right track, be there for a while. That's what they hoped they were getting in John Gruden. Now Gruden has to leave because of these emails, you know, with this bad language and inappropriate terms he was using and the things he was saying about certain people. So now the next coach is like, okay, we have to make sure we get a good guy in here that we don't have to worry about the off-the-field stuff. He's going to be here for a while. So I think from that sense, it's a good spot to go. Whereas, say, the Giants move on from Joe Judge, all they want is for you to come in and win games. And if you don't, it's New York. They'll fire you in 2 years as well. For Las Vegas, transient population, it's not a Raiders town. They just had the scandal with Gruden. From that sense, I think it'd be a good opportunity to go to Vegas. I don't think the roster is that great. I think there's a lot of work to be done. Mike Mayock is probably going to be gone at the end of the year as well, so you could either bring in your own GM or you, depending on who you are, could get GM control. So that's beneficial. But Mark Davis is a bit of a weird guy. He's the cheapest owner in the league. It is Las Vegas. I don't know how much of a home field advantage there'd be. Derek Carr, is that enough of a sales point for you? You know, there's pros and cons like anything else. But I do think, at least for the Raiders, I think it could offer some good job security for you, because I don't think they want to continue this shuffling after what just happened with John Gruden. Maybe I'll even give you some thoughts on Gruden, because that is a bit of a complex situation as he resigned yesterday as head coach of the Raiders. But every week on the show, I give you some strong, big opinions, especially throughout the football season. So every week on the show, I like to hold myself accountable, hold myself in check. Certain things I'll get right, I'll remind you of them. I'll pat myself on the back, but plenty of things I get wrong, I'll also remind you of those as well, because we remain honest around here. A lot of people will just throw things out there and never come back to them when they become ridiculous thoughts or opinions. Not here. We hold ourselves accountable. I'll remind you of some of the dumb things I thought or said over the past week. We do it every week, where I was right, where I was wrong.
I was right.
There we go. Joe's multitasking right now. Georgia, where I was right, Georgia. I've been saying for a couple of weeks, Georgia is the number one team in college football. I would have had them number one even before Alabama lost. And we saw this past Saturday, Alabama lost to Texas A&M, who was playing a backup quarterback. Georgia won on the road with their backup quarterback to a top 20 team instead of an unranked Texas A&M. Now, coming up a little bit later on, don't dance on the grave of Alabama just yet. It's not like their season is over. They just lost a game, but this past Saturday helped to further illustrate the point that I do think Georgia is ahead of Alabama. I thought that going into this past Saturday. Georgia, I thought, has looked better this year. They also have the better side of the football. And then this past Saturday was that nail in the coffin, at least to put Georgia ahead of Alabama. No surprise. Alabama goes on the road. They lose to Texas A&M and a backup quarterback, an unranked team. Georgia blows out Auburn. They still have only allowed 2 touchdowns defensively all year. Georgia has been the clear number one team. We thought it was Georgia, Alabama, everyone else. Now it's Georgia, then Alabama, and then everybody else. Don't count Alabama out just yet. But so far, from what we've seen, you have to position Georgia a step ahead of Alabama right now, this many weeks into the season.
Where Luke was wrong.
Texas, Oklahoma. I took Texas. All right, let me get this off. Let me get this out in front. I was wrong on the picks as well. We had a terrible week for picks on Friday on the show. We went 2-9. Brutal. Absolutely awful. First losing week since the since the NFL season has begun. So a terrible week. We're still over 500 slightly. We're at 53%. We're winning on the year still, but what an awful week. It was bound to happen. We were rolling the last couple of weeks, especially in college football. You knew at a certain point we would totally come crashing down. That's what happened on Friday. We'll try to bounce back with a winning week this week. But 2-9 on the picks. And one of those picks was Texas. And I was looking so good. I even touched the money early. I sent a screenshot to my buddy, who I texted earlier in the week. He asked, who are you on this week? I said, take Texas. He said, I don't know about that. So I sent him a screenshot when they went up 14-0 2 minutes in. And I said, looking pretty good early. I touched the money. And I blew it. But Texas, they blew it. Biggest comeback in that rivalry history. Oklahoma, we talked about it yesterday in the show, but Oklahoma to come back and win. My one concern last week when picking Texas was, as I said, we have not seen Oklahoma put it together just yet. We have not seen them play their type of football. And if they do it maybe it happens for the first time Saturday. If they do, they could certainly beat Texas. And that's kind of what happened. Not right away, but once they got Spencer Rattler out of the game, you saw, just like the fans were calling for last week, Oklahoma was starting the wrong guy. And once they made that change in the second half, they did start to play. Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley football, came back and won. A brutal loss for Texas, especially because it's in the rivalry. But don't forget, Nick Saban once blew a 24-point lead and lost. He once lost to a couple of teams there at Alabama early in his tenure he shouldn't have. So, don't totally discount Steve Sarkisian and the job he's doing based off of that embarrassing loss. But what a brutal loss it was for Texas. I thought they were going to win. I felt really good when they went up 21 points, and then they totally fell apart. No, Texas football still is not back.
Where Luke was right.
Iowa. Now, I took Iowa to beat Penn State on Saturday. That game played out almost exactly like I thought, other than the Sean Clifford injury. And sure, Iowa should be grateful that they didn't have to play Sean Clifford the entire game. If they did, I don't know if they would win. They fell behind early. They rallied back against the backup quarterback, but they forced more turnovers, 4 interceptions Saturday. They get the close win at home. They're the number 2 team in the country, and they're the number 2 defense only behind Georgia. Iowa has now won 12 games in a row, and when you look at their schedule, they got a bit of a cakewalk the rest of the regular season. They should be in the Big Ten championship. And then you win that game, maybe even if you lose that game, depending on how the rest of college football goes. But if you win that game, you're in the playoff. That'll be your play-in game. You'll have to beat Ohio State or maybe beat Penn State again or Michigan State, whoever represents that other division. But Iowa won a big game Saturday against Penn State. Yes, I know, against the backup quarterback for half of the game. Hey, that's what happens. It's football. Iowa found a way to win at home. They're the number 2 team in the country, and as I've been saying all year, they're the best team we weren't talking about, and they're still the best team we're not talking enough about. That defense is legitimate, and it helped them win a big one on Saturday.
Where Luke was wrong.
UNC. I thought UNC, I did not pick them to make the playoff. But, I did think UNC would win the other half of the ACC, play Clemson in the ACC championship, and I even was billing it up in the offseason as a really interesting game. That would be interesting. Watch out. UNC could maybe challenge Clemson this year. They may be on their same level. Well, maybe they are, but it's not the level I thought it was going to be. So instead of UNC, I guess I could just say the entire ACC, because I thought Clemson, UNC, we are ticketed to a great ACC championship game in Charlotte between those two. It's going to be a lot of fun. And yet, those two teams are not the two best teams in their own division in the ACC. But to focus specifically on UNC, another disappointing year. And we touched on this yesterday. They were one of my big losers of the weekend. Right? But you lose to Virginia Tech, then you lose to Georgia Tech, then you lose to Florida State at home on Saturday. Brutal. Mack Brown, in the last 2 years alone, has lost 5 games in which they're favored. Right? When they're supposed to win, they've lost a lot of games that they should win. And they were a number 10 team to begin the season. I did not think they'd be a playoff team, but I really didn't. I got to tell myself I didn't think much of it when they were ranked 10th. I thought, yeah, that seems right. I think UNC will be a really good team this year. And here they are in 5th place in their own division in the ACC. It's been an embarrassing year for UNC, and we keep hyping them up with Mack Brown. He's essentially been 500 in his 3 years there. It goes back to my pet cemetery theory. I say it all the time. I brought it up when Randy Edsall got fired a couple of weeks ago. Things usually don't go as well the second time around. They brought back Mack Brown. We have had these preseason expectations for them every year, and they continue to disappoint.
Where Luke was right.
Texas A&M. Now, I did not include this as a pick on Friday, but Texas A&M, I like them a lot heading into the season. I like them a lot last year when they finished fifth in the country. I've been a Jimbo Fisher guy. And I said Texas A&M, Alabama will be one of the games of the year. And then last week, as we were getting ready for the game, I said, oh, nope, wrong about that. But it ended up being one of the games of the year. I was right the first time. And I was right about Texas A&M's ability. They showed it on Saturday. I don't think that was flukish. I think part of it is, yeah, sure, you get up more for Alabama than when you play Colorado. But what you saw Saturday from Texas A&M, you can't say like, oh, that was just a flash in the pan. No, they showed they have that ability in them. You just have to unlock it. And by the way, the two coaches that have given Nick Saban the toughest time this year, Dan Mullen and Jimbo Fisher, who I'll continue to say, behind Saban, are the two best coaches in the SEC, ahead of, yes, Jimbo, ahead of Kirby Smart. I like those two a lot. If you listen to the show, you know, I always, you know, I pound the table, especially for Dan Mullen, but also Jimbo. And Jimbo got a big win Saturday. First loss for Alabama against an unranked team in over 100 games. First loss when favored by double digits for Alabama in, I think, 8 years. Big-time win for Texas A&M on Saturday. That's why you pay Jimbo Fisher. Has it been a disappointing year for Texas A&M? Absolutely. But they did show their potential on Saturday, what they are capable of. They just haven't been able to put it together, at least not prior to Saturday.
Where Luke was right.
Michigan-Nebraska. This was not an official pick, but I did put Michigan on upset alert against Nebraska. They were favored by 3. I said, I think Michigan's going to win, but I think it's going to be really tough. And it sure was, because Nebraska is getting better. Our first impressions are so strong, and especially standalone games. It's something that we do a poor job of in this industry. You come in the next morning after a Thursday night football game, watch ESPN, watch Fox Sports on a Friday, and how they react to that prior Thursday night game in the NFL. Or today, reacting to last night's Monday night football game. We come in with big opinions. I started the show talking about Lamar Jackson. So, standalone games play a big role. First impressions are huge. And our first impression this year of Nebraska was a standalone game, week 0 against Illinois. It was the first game of the season. It was the game they were promoting for weeks. Week 0, Nebraska-Illinois. You sat down so excited for the season and watched that game, and you saw a terrible Nebraska team, and you thought, yep, nothing has changed. This program is still a train wreck under Scott Frost. And at the time, it seemed accurate. But Nebraska has gotten a lot better since then. And they almost pulled off the upset against Michigan. In fact, they probably should have in that game at home against Michigan on Saturday. Michigan snuck out of there. So they stay alive. They keep their playoff hopes alive. But don't sleep on Nebraska. I'm not telling you they're going to go win a national championship anytime soon or even go win the Big Ten next season. But they are a lot better than they were the last couple of seasons or the team you thought you were seeing week 0. They have improved. Give Scott Frost some credit. His seat, I don't think, is as hot as it was even just a few weeks ago. Are they meeting expectations? No, but it's not some sort of, you know, they don't have the same reputation or they haven't played the same way that we believe they have in the recent years. They have improved this season, and they almost pulled off a big win against Michigan on Saturday.
Where Luke was wrong.
South Carolina. I thought the Gamecocks would compete with Tennessee. I didn't think they'd win, but I did think they'd keep it the single digits, and I was way off. That game was over by the end of the first quarter, 28-0. And I was watching it in my hotel room in Johnson City, Tennessee, and quite frankly, I'll be honest, I was pretty shocked. I thought we were going to get a competitive game, and it was not. Tennessee showed a big difference, a big gap, especially in that first quarter. With their speed, their athleticism, the play calling, the offense, South Carolina had no answer. They couldn't keep up. Tennessee was moving quickly. Hayden Hooker was fantastic, moved them right down the field. We talked about the Gamecocks play calling inside the 5 yesterday. That didn't help matters either. But I thought South Carolina would compete. I didn't think they'd win, but I thought they'd go to Tennessee and they'd give us a great game. I thought that would be a fun game to watch. Instead, it's like, all right, well, I can get ready for the Citadel now because 10 minutes in, this game is a blowout. It's over. It's embarrassing. First-year head coaches, two programs that have struggled the last couple of years, and now 6 games in, Tennessee already showed there's a sizable gap between them and South Carolina right now, and it's not good for the Gamecocks this early on in that process. They both started at the same starting point. They're on a race, and right now Heupel is blowing past Shane Beamer in that program currently. And for a while, the Gamecocks had passed Tennessee. At this moment, Tennessee in year one of the new coaches has passed the Gamecocks. I thought there would be a lot more competitive game, and I was way off. Tennessee, quite frankly, embarrassed the Gamecocks on Saturday.
Where Luke was right.
The Steelers. I said this is Ben Roethlisberger's last stand. Against the Broncos at home, banged up quarterback for Denver and a struggling offense. I know the Broncos have a good defense, but Roethlisberger, you know, this is you can't lose at home to this team and that quarterback. And he went out there and he played really well. Played his best game of the season as he's trying to save his job. And the Steelers got a much needed win against Denver. So he gets, you know, a save of execution for a little while, Ben Roethlisberger. Because otherwise, if he's struggling and he lost that game, I think you bench him. But he went out there, played well. And look, he's a Hall of Fame quarterback. He's a veteran. Mike Tomlin, Hall of Fame coach. He's had the job for 15 years. That was the type of game you just couldn't lose. At home, coming off a three-game losing streak, the Broncos are coming to your place. They can't score any points. Bridgewater coming back from a concussion. You can't lose that game. And they almost gave it away in the fourth quarter, but for most of that game, the Steelers really had full control and played really well. And they needed that victory. Ben Roethlisberger needed that performance. It keeps the Wolves at bay for at least another week, and we'll see how he does moving forward. But he showed that ability, that flash, that maybe there is something left there for Pittsburgh, for Roethlisberger, for the Steelers, and he needed to Sunday against the Broncos.
Where Luke was wrong.
The Jacksonville Jaguars. I have to stop counting on them ever again. I'm done. I have to totally cut them out of my life, the Jaguars. Their season's now over after losing Sunday. I mean, if it wasn't already over, it is now. They still had a chance. You beat the Titans on Sunday, you get within a game. And then they went out there and they lost by 20 points at home with extra time to prepare. And I picked the Jaguars as one of my picks on Friday. I've included them in the picks, I think, every week. Now, I picked against them week one. Otherwise, I think I've picked the Jaguars to cover the spread every game since, and they have just once. I have to stop counting on them. They are just a bad team, second longest losing streak in NFL history. They had the whole drama with Urban Meyer. Now they're 0-5. Season's done with. You know, it's like that person in your life you just can't kick. They continue to let you down. They continue to maybe even stab you in the back, put you in bad positions, screw you over, whatever, and you just can't. You can't just separate yourself from them. That's me and the Jaguars right now. I'm going to try to get better at it moving forward, but it's time to count out the Jaguars. Sunday was a demoralizing performance. A season on the line for them, essentially, and they get blown out at home to the Titans and don't play well. Questionable play calling. Urban Meyer lying more after the game. They're just a mess. I should never have expected anything different.
Where Luke was right.
Sam Darnold without Christian McCaffrey. He looked really good the first 3 weeks. Last 2 weeks, they have trailed in the second half. He's thrown 4 interceptions. It's easy to play quarterback when you're leading. For Sam Darnold, the problem always was when they were trailing. He trailed all the time in New York, and he didn't have a lot of talent around him, and he tried to make things happen, and what happened instead were turnovers. Same thing here. No Christian McCaffrey. Team's trailing. Offensive line gets exposed a little bit. He's trying to make things happen. He's throwing bad interceptions. Game on the line Sunday against the Eagles, he threw a game-sealing interception. Bad look, especially when you blow a 12-point lead at home. So the Panthers now with Sam Darnold, you hope you get Christian McCaffrey back this week, but that's kind of exposing. Even if he plays well the rest of the year, you now know his limitations. He needs McCaffrey. He needs to really play with a lead. He needs to take some things off of his plate. I still think Sam Darnold will be a good quarterback with the Panthers. I still think he's a playoff quarterback with the Panthers. I never thought he'd be a Super Bowl-winning quarterback for Carolina, and I think that was shown these last 2 weeks. He's a trailer, not a truck. He needs the team to help carry him to these big wins. He needs a Christian McCaffrey, and without McCaffrey the last 2 weeks, right, without that makeup, he looks a little bit different, and I think the opinion is a little bit different right now about Darnold as compared to just a couple of weeks ago.
Where Luke was wrong.
Let's combine two. The two best teams performance-wise in the NFC right now, probably the Cardinals-Cowboys. And I was wrong on them both. Let's start with the Cardinals. Last undefeated team in the NFL, did not see that coming. I've never been a big Cliff Kingsbury fan of the NFL. I like Kyler Murray. I like watching him, but I never thought he would be like a Super Bowl-winning quarterback. I just thought he had some limitations there. The Cardinals have been fun to watch. They're 5-0. Yeah, sure, they snuck out of there with a win week two against the Vikings. But, hey, you know, if you find ways to win, you get some breaks along the way. 5-0, and most impressively, they won with their defense this past week. Yeah, against a rookie quarterback, but still, they found a different way to win a game finally. That's important for the Cardinals. If you want to win a Super Bowl, you have to be able to win many different ways. The Cardinals finally won a different way on Sunday. And for the Cowboys, I did not see this coming. I had them around 500. I did not have them winning the division. It's not a great division. The Cowboys, I still have some concerns. I think that defense is too reliant on turnovers, but Dak Prescott is playing really well. The Cowboys are rolling. They're 4-1, and their only loss was to start the season on the road against the Super Bowl champs in a game that came down to the very end. I think a lot of us had our preseason predictions about the Cowboys way off. This is a much better team than I was anticipating, and they're playing good football right now. I certainly think they win the division. I don't know if they're a Super Bowl contender just yet, but the Cowboys and the Cardinals are playing some of the best football in the NFC, and I certainly did not forecast that.
Where Luke was right.
Baker Mayfield. In one possession games, this is one of those baseball, you know, kind of muddied stats, but it's important. In the second half of games, when they are within one possession, right? So the biggest moments of a football team, one possession game, second half, Baker Mayfield has a QBR of 19. Average is 50. great is 100. 19, which is the second worst in the NFL. So in the biggest spots, one possession game, second half, Baker Mayfield is performing like the second worst quarterback. It's why I'll continue to say, do not give him the big contract. I'll take my chances in the draft or free agency instead of handcuffing my team by investing that much in Baker Mayfield, being unable to provide him with enough talent elsewhere to win. And we saw it on Sunday. Baker Mayfield had a chance to go on a game-winning drive. He was dinking and dunking his way down the field against the Chargers and got nowhere. And prior to that, when the Browns had a chance to go win the game, a 3rd-and-9 leading against the Chargers, they instead ran the football, punted it back to the Chargers, who got the game-winning touchdown. The game was on the line. They could complete a pass and win the game, and they said, nah, let's take the football out of Baker's hands and try to trust our defense more. Trust our defense more than Baker, the same defense that allowed over 40 points on Sunday. Baker Mayfield is a good quarterback, but with limitations. He's not a franchise quarterback. He's not a Super Bowl-winning quarterback. We've seen that. In the biggest spots, he doesn't play well. In fact, he plays like the second-worst quarterback in the biggest moments. Baker is not that guy that you want to give the big contract to and give him the keys to the car.
Where Luke was wrong.
Lamar Jackson. I didn't think he had a comeback in him or a passing attack like last night. He now has multiple games here this season with over 300 yards. Last night was phenomenal. He erased a 19-point deficit in the second half. I didn't think he had that in him. Yes, it was a bad Colts team, but that's impressive for Lamar Jackson and a huge step in the right direction. Can he do that again? I don't know. We'll see. But just to do it the one time, to show he's capable, that's a big win for Lamar Jackson, especially against some doubters, like myself, of Lamar and his throwing ability.
Where Luke was right.
Trey Lance. Everyone was pimping this rookie quarterback class. I watched them in preseason, told you, these guys aren't ready. Justin Fields, Trey Lance. Trey Lance made his first start Sunday. They scored 0 points in the first half, only 10 points for the game. He posted a 33 QBR. He's incredibly raw. Didn't see the playmaking ability that they were hoping for. He's like a worse version right now of Colin Kaepernick. Incredibly inaccurate, unsettled feet. Trey Lance is a development project. He's not ready yet. That's why Jimmy Garoppolo is still incredibly important for the San Francisco 49ers.
Where Luke was wrong.
Kyle Pitts. He played great on Sunday for the Falcons, and they got a win I didn't think they would get in London. I thought without Calvin Ridley, Kyle Pitts as a rookie, he's the only target now the Falcons have. I thought he was in big trouble Sunday. Instead, he responded with the best game of his career. A touchdown, over 100 yards, caught 9 of 10 targets. He was fantastic, and he showed why the Falcons took a tight end in the top 5. For the first time in 50 years in draft history, he was very good.
Where Luke was right.
Texans-Patriots. The Patriots snuck out with a victory, but I thought it was way too many points. I told you to take the Texans. Mac Jones, a rookie on the road, should not be favored by 9, especially in a matchup between 1 and 3 teams. The Patriots were lucky to get out of there with a victory. And Mac Jones led his own comeback in the second half. That was impressive. But that was way too many points, and the Patriots fortunate just to get the win.
Where Luke was wrong.
Last one. Last Tuesday, I did a top 10 ranking of the playoff teams in Major League Baseball. I said the Rays were the number one team. I thought they were the best team in baseball heading into the playoffs. Now they're the first team eliminated. They lost 3 straight to the Red Sox. Their season is over. And I think for the Rays, they started 3 rookie starting pitchers in the first 3 games of the series. First team to ever do that in playoff history. Then game 4, it was a bullpen game. And I just don't think that works when you go up against a Chris Sale, who didn't pitch very well at all, but a Nathan Eovaldi, who's a big-time pitcher, some of the other guys that the Red Sox have, right? I think that stuff can work over the course of the season. I think it doesn't work as well in the playoffs to count on rookies. Playoff baseball is a little bit different to count on that rookie at Fenway Park as opposed to a June game in empty Baltimore. To go on a bullpen game with your season on the line. I think it's a little bit different to do that on a Tuesday in the regular season. So that stuff worked really well over the course of a 162-game season, and don't think this is me knocking what the Rays do because they are the most impressive team in Major League Baseball in the way they operate. But that is easier, I believe, to rely on in the regular season, to patch things together, to use 41 different pitchers during the regular season. But come playoff time, when there are a few more restrictions, when there's more pressure, I think you need somebody you can hand the ball to and count on them to give you a good start instead of 3 rookies in a row and then a bullpen game. They use 9 pitchers per night. The more pitchers you use, the greater chance something can go wrong. And when you're talking about elimination games, you can't afford that. When you're talking about game 140 or even game 97 of the season and one of your relievers doesn't have it and you lose the game, that's okay. There's another game tomorrow. When you talk about a playoff series, that's a riskier way to play, and it did not pay off for the Rays. They're the first team to go home. We'll wrap up hour 2 when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
We'll be right back. Wrapping up hour two here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Just ran through the long list of things I was right about and also wrong about here over the past week. If you ever miss anything from the show, such as where I was right, where I was wrong, you can always catch that on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. Search ESPN Radio Charleston to find the show on demand. It is ACC Media Day today for college basketball, which is hard to believe, right? Basketball is right around the corner. I mean, the NBA is getting ready to start, but college basketball still, games will be coming up in about 4 weeks, which we got baseball playoffs going on. You're in the middle of a football season. It's hard to then look ahead and, oh, yeah, college basketball in a couple of weeks. It just feels so far, so much further away. But ACC Media Day is going on today, and, of course, you know, the big storyline is Coach K's final season. And, you know, it's the farewell tour. So, you know, tickets are going to go like hotcakes for Duke. And Coach K said that four tickets, he spoke to the media today, he said four tickets for the Duke-UNC game this year, which – I haven't looked at the schedule. This says that's that'll be his final game at Cameron Indoor. I don't know if they mean that rivalry or just overall. Is that the last regular season home game for Duke? That would make sense, and you know that's going to be a huge event if that is the case. That would be good scheduling. Put that at the very end. Have that be how Coach K goes out. Although, you know, it's kind of like homecoming. Don't you want to put, like, a really bad opponent so Coach K can make sure he gets a win in his final home game? UNC would be a great story, a fun matchup, but, you know, well, what if you lose to your rival? Is that how you really want to end at home instead of playing, you know, the worst team in the conference and going out on a nice victory? But as a fan, that'll be a lot of fun. If his final home game, I have to look at the schedule. I should have looked in the commercial break. But Duke-UNC, if that's the final home game. Anyways, the point being, Coach K said that four tickets have sold for $1 million. $1 million to go see Duke-UNC, who probably neither one will be all that great this year. Duke-UNC, $1 million to go see Duke-UNC this year for Coach K's final home game. Are you kidding? Who would spend $1 million on that? I mean, if you're talking Super Bowl, if you're talking World Series, that's one thing. $1 million. Maybe it's just Coach K, you know, pumping his ego with a little lip service. He's the one that put that info out today, right? Maybe he's saying that because it's his final game. And he, oh, yeah, people are paying $1 million to come see my final game. I don't know. Maybe. But who's spending $1 million to go to Duke-UNC? I wish I had that money to blow. So, you know, the Citadel plays Duke this year. And this was good by Scott Eisberg, friend of the station, who you could hear on Fan Talk each day. He looked this up. He figured, okay, someone's willing to spend $1 million for Duke-UNC. What would people be willing to spend for the Citadel against Duke? Because the Bulldogs will be playing against Duke at Cameron Indoor on November 22nd, the Monday before Thanksgiving. And I can't wait. I've never been in that arena. I've never been in that stadium before. Can't wait to be there. We were supposed to be there last year. Then the pandemic changed things. Now it's Coach K's final season. It's going to be a blast. I'm looking forward to it. Tickets, the cheapest tickets right now for the Citadel against Duke, $425. $425 for upper level, for like the worst seats in the house. Cheapest tickets, $425 to go see the Citadel and Duke. You can go see the Citadel play anybody you want here at McAllister for, you know, $4.25 instead of $425 at Cameron Indoor this year. So that's going to be a big event. I'm looking forward to being there in the building for that one. That'll be a lot of fun, regardless of the final score, just to be in there as part of that final season. It's going to be crazy this year for Coach K. And I'll be honest, look, Coach K deserves whatever he's going to have come his way in terms of celebrations this year. But I've never been a fan of these farewell tours. Of Mariano Rivera announcing it before the season. Even David Ortiz did it. Joe Mauer. Just retire. We don't need to go through it, especially baseball, 162-game season. And every time they went to a different team, they'd do a pregame ceremony. They'd give them a gift. They'd honor them. You know, I mean, these are legends, so I get it. If you're going to honor anybody over the course of a season, it should be these types of guys. It should be Coach K. But I'm the Roy Williams type. Just retiring and go home. You don't need a whole year of people stroking your ego and telling you how great of a career you had for a whole season. Do it one big night if you want, right? Home game, crowds there, they honor you, or maybe even after you retire, but this is how it's going to be all year. It's going to be crazy around Coach K's final season. Tickets are going to be jacked up. People are going to be there, and it'll be a lot of fun. How good's the team going to be? I don't know. We'll see. But it'll be quite the farewell tour this year for Coach K, and it includes the Citadel. Traveling there, all you have to do is spend $1,000 if you want to go with a friend to go see the Citadel and Duke this year. Hour three coming up next. What last night's game shows us about the AFC. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.